Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine of this generation, my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Hey there, kids, and all those Keebler bits. Welcome to another rousing edition of After Rot. Tonight we have on the show Rhiannon Frater. Hello, Rhiannon. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm always amazing. But we have the one very vital, important question that I have to start with anybody who I have a guest, since usually most of the time I introduce it at the beginning. What kind of cookies?
I like peanut butter.
Okay. I can deal with you.
I do. This has always been my favorite.
Well, the funny thing
homemade that I make.
Well, there you go. The funny thing is this weekend being Easter, I was up at my parents, and my mom always makes peanut butter cookies. I don't like peanut butter cookies, but I love my mom's peanut butter cookies.
Yeah, that's kind of how I have to cook my own.
There you go. So, you are an author of a couple of books.
Yeah, I think the last count was between 25 and 30. I always forget.
I was looking at your website and said, "Yeah, geez, I only knew about three of them."
Well, there you go.
Well, four of them, because I keep forgetting about The Living Dead Boy.
Don't do that. That's a great series.
I've heard that. That's why I pointed that one out.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about which one of these is your favorite book right now.
Geez, that's like asking who your favorite child is. And I don't have children.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. I love all of them. It's always like kind of like I gravitate to the one I just wrote. So I would say, okay, Journey Across Zombie Texas in the Living Dead Boy series is my current favorite. And that's simply because I was really looking forward to that particular book, because there's this one scene in the book that I actually dreamed that was completely terrifying, and I couldn't wait to get that on the page. So, but overall, I think the book that's closest to my heart is The Tale of the Vampire Bride, simply because I think that was my first real book. Like, that was the book that when I finished it, I was like, yeah, I'm a writer. I can do this. This is possible. So probably that one. That's just like, I guess it's my firstborn. So there you go.
There you go. As I understand, most people's firstborn is usually the important one.
As a firstborn child, I agree.
There you go. I am also a firstborn child. That's what I understand.
Firstborn children unite.
Hey, I'm going to take over the world. I don't know about everybody else.
It's the younger ones who think they're going to take over the world, but it's the oldest ones that actually do. So
we just play with their minds and make them think that they're getting away with stuff. It's like, haha, no, you keep doing that. You're not getting away with nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have a quick question, though. The Last Bastion of the Living.
Oh, yeah.
Is the cover of that Eloise?
Who's Eloise?
Eloise Knapp? Tim?
Oh, no, Tim no, Long? No. No, that's, I don't know who the model is. That's Claudia McKinney from Fat Puppy Art.
Okay.
She and my husband do most of my covers. She did the first two Last Bastion books. She did the first Living Dead Boy book. She did all the Vampire Bride books. And when I signed with Permuted, she did all the covers for the Permuted books. So, and then my husband does some of the other ones. He's been doing more and more cover art, and he's been doing it for me. So that's been kind of cool, because then he gets annoyed, but I'm like, could you change that? Could you change this? Could you do, you know, so on Journey Across Zombie Texas, what he did with the zombie is epic. I love that zombie. She's so freaking gross looking. So.
The girl in the background?
Yeah, that zombie. I really like the way she came out. She looks so rotty, gross.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna have a zombie on the cover, why not be rotty, gross, as you say?
Right, right. Go to RhiannonFrater.com and click on books, and you'll see all the covers. And most of those are Claudia McKinney from Fat Puppy Art, and then there's a few by Philip Rogers. And those are the illustrated ones, and then a lot of the other ones are my
I know
husband.
Philip.
You know Philip. Yeah, Philip's a great artist.
He is a lovely artist.
Yeah.
And a nice person, too. And his wife is a nice person, too.
They are favorite people.
Well, there you go. See? We met all of these people at a horror realm in, like...
years ago.
Some city that starts with P. Was it Pennsylvania? Pittsburgh?
It was Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. I always get them mixed up. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like about 7 or 8 years ago the first time.
I think I went in 09 and 010.
Yeah, well, I think I pretty much 010. Only went... No, I think I went three times.
I went... I definitely went 2 years, maybe three. I don't remember. It's been a while. Life got busy and crazy and, you know, things
It does
happen.
That. It does yeah, that. That's does why I was really that. Surprised when I saw, holy crap, she's got all those books.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like it's been that long. But then I'm like, oh my God, it is. And I've written a lot. And I had 2 years of illness in there where I hardly wrote anything. So that says something about my productivity. So.
Ooh, well, you should probably read about, crap, why can't I remember his name right now? Oh, man, the guy does the Xanth series. Piers Anthony.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories about him is he gets hit by a car. He's laid up in the hospital for 3 months. He writes two books in his sick bed.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that guy liked to write. But
I couldn't do that. I was really, really sick. So, I mean, my brain basically shut off and my body went on strike. So, but when I got well, one of my first big moments that I knew I was back was when I wrote a book. So that when I could actually finish, go from beginning to end, I was like, okay, I'm getting well. This is good. I'm on my way.
Excellent. So, well, I got to say one thing before I forget about it, because I didn't make a note on my notes, but I do have to say it. I love your website. The website is really well done. It's actually very poppy. It's very easy to get to. And it's like, holy crap, look at all. This is all easy. And it's actually, it's well done.
Oh, thank you, because I was thinking about changing it.
Okay.
So now I won't change it so fast.
Well, you can change it. Its change is good. I mean, that's actually what keeps it fresh and whatever. I'm just saying that the execution of it is much better than what I see with some people's website. And this is actually part of the marketing and discussion points. Is did you do this or do you have somebody do this?
No. I have a fan out of Romania. His name is Tudor, and he did it. And he's really good at what he does. But he's really busy. He does a lot. He has a lot of projects. And so sometimes I have to go, hello, help me. I don't know what I'm doing.
Poke with a stick.
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good at what he does. And he's pretty much an entrepreneur and.
Well, you
a
can
cool
let him
dude.
Know I'm giving him feedback saying he's done a wonderful job there.
Yeah, I really like the way it came out. There's a few things I'd like to tweak. We'll work on that. But but I do like the way it came out, and it's been the same for a couple of years. That's why I'm thinking about doing a little bit of an overhaul on it. But we'll see. Well, it's on the list of things that might happen. You know, meanwhile, I have a lot of writing to do. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's that's part of the game, right? Is the writing on the one side and then the marketing on the other side.
Oh, there's so much to do that's not. I mean, being a full-time writer, it's like people think all I do is sit at my desk and write, and it's not at all. I mean, there's so much other stuff that has to happen and things that I have to do, and it's kind of crazy.
How much time of a day would you say you spend doing social media stuff, just saying, hey, hi? Stuff like that.
Probably not enough. Probably not as much as I should. And it's only because, like I said, I was sick and I'm still coming back from that. And I get easily distracted. So I have to make this like a to-do list to make sure I'm like on track on stuff. But it's a lot. It's like sometimes answering a bunch of emails, or it's talking with my agent, or, you know, it's dealing with, you know, setting up interviews, or it's organizing my street teams for my individual books. And it's even like making images for promotions or creating ads and stuff. I mean, it's just a bunch of stuff. And some days I will be working all day and realize I haven't written a word on a book, but I've been doing something all day related to writing. So it's all, and sometimes it's like, I don't even realize how much time it's taken until I look at the clock and go, oh, I've been doing this for 4 hours. Wow. You know, so
you said street teams. Is that something that you picked up on or saw that was a good thing to use elsewise?
Well, I'm using mine. I call them promo book groups. I'm doing it differently from most people. A lot of authors create like this massive, huge group. Usually on Facebook, where they have like maybe a couple of hundred people in it, and then they like let them see their books early or beta read the books, and then they help them promote the book. That's too much. Like that, having something that big is a little too much for me right now to deal with. So I have much smaller groups. I think the last two street teams I had, one for the Living Dead Boy book, was about 35 people. And then the one I have currently for The Impaled Bride, which is actually on Radish. It won't be a book until next year. It's being released on the Radish app, so people can subscribe to the story and read a new installment every month. They're helping me promote that and beta read that. And I think there's about 30, 35 to 40 people in that. I might grow that one a little bit bigger. So I'm just experimenting to see what works for me, because, I mean, I've read where some people have street teams where they spend like thousands upon thousands of dollars creating perks for their street teams, and I'm like, I can't do that, I'm poor. You know, I don't have that in my budget. I have to, you know, because like I said, sick for 2 years, that affects your finances. So what I'm trying to do is just build up a group of people that I can depend on to help me promote the books and give me good beta reader feedback, and then when the book comes out, then they write a review, an honest review. I don't request certain amount of stars or anything, and I get anywhere usually from 3 to 5, and that's fine. I don't, you know, if they gave me a 1 star, if they hated the book, that's fine too. I mean, I'd rather have an honest review than a dishonest one. So, but they're interesting. They're fun. I'm liking them. I think I was real intimidated by street teams because people were telling me how they had thousands of people, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I couldn't deal with having like that much going on. I'd be like really overwhelming. I'd rather create like these little bit more personal relationships with these readers that I'm having, you know, talk with. And I mean, one of them was, you know, the cool thing is because The Impaled Bride takes place in Eastern Europe, and it spans from the 1300s to the 1800s. And several of my readers are Romani, and one of them is in Romania now. And she gave me some really interesting feedback on the names. And I told her kind of what I was looking to do, and she helped me actually refine some plot points, just because she was upset that one of the names was Hungarian and not Romanian. So that was really fun. I mean, that she helped me refine that aspect of the story.
That's one of my favorite types of things from the fan base side. Why did you use such and such and whatever and whatever and whatever, when it's like, it's clearly part of another culture altogether. It's like, how the hell do you expect me or anybody else to really know that? It's like, it's a thing you know because you're into that.
Well, I was glad because it gives me some, I mean, I try really hard, especially with,
right,
the Tale of the Vampire Bride books were really intensive research, and writing The Impaled Bride, which is both a prequel and a sequel at the same time to that series, I try to stay as true as possible to the cultures, because I'm writing about a time period where Romania, Hungary, and all that area was very much in turmoil, and the power base was always in flux. The Hungarians were very dominant over the Romanians, and so there was a reason why one of the characters doesn't have has a Hungarian name, not a Romanian name. It was on purpose, but because of her reaction to it, and I do have a Romanian fan base, I was like, okay, I need to make this a lot clearer than I was going to make it clear. I was going to have the reveal of why her name is different from what you think it was a little bit further into the story, but I changed it up because I was like, okay, I need to get this out of the way so that, you know, my Romanian readers understand what's going on. So I think it worked out really well, and that was one of the things I do like about having beta readers, that I have people reading what I'm working on. And the same when I was working on the Living Dead Boy series, I mean, it was written for, it's geared so that kids 10 and up can read it, though I've been told 6-year-olds have read it and loved it, and 65-year-old men have loved it. It's a story that I wrote for people who love the Goonies and the Lost Boys and the Monster Squad and Stranger Things, you know. It's so kids can read it and imagine themselves in the story, but also adults can kind of revisit their childhood. So when I was writing The Living Dead Boy, I had teachers, I had parents, you know, and I had just, you know, people who love the genre reading the story and giving me feedback. And that was important because even though I do not pull punches with that series and characters die, including children and stuff, I did try to walk that kind of that fine line where I didn't want to go too far into like the description of the gore or anything. I want it, if you're an adult, your brain will definitely fill in the gaps. But if you're a kid, there's a safety buffer there. So, you know, it's the difference between an Eli Roth movie and Monster Squad. I
guess. Well, seems how I've seen both, I know what you mean.
You know, Monster Squad had sufficient amount of gore for what it was, but, you know.
Not so much.
Yeah.
But Stranger Things was a darn good, awesome show.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the main, like, when Stranger Things came out, I had already been planning to write, because the demand was there to write a sequel to The Living Dead Boy, because The Living Dead Boy came out ages ago and was published by Small Press. And then the rights reverted back to me. We did a new cover with Claudia McKinney, and because of the new cover, adults were picking it up. And I got a really sweet message from this one reader, and he's like, you know, I'm an adult, but I read it, and when I did, it was like I was a kid again, and I started remembering all my buddies and all the stuff I used to do, all the crazy crap I did when I was a kid, and he says, I really like that. You know, I liked kind of revisiting my past, so that was neat that you know, he not only enjoyed the book, but he also had nice memories come to the surface. So, you know, and I wanted to kind of, you know, watching Stranger Things kind of reminded me of ideas I had for sequels, and I was like, you know, I just need to write the sequels, and I did. I wrote them back to back. I wrote Lost in Texas and Journey Across Zombie Texas, pretty much back to back. And the beta readers were really helpful, letting me know if I was on track, if things felt good. I mean, I'm really mean to these poor babies. I mean, the things these kids go through.
Well, you know what I have to say about that, right? Kill them. Kill them all.
I do kill the kids. I kill the kids. Kids die. There was this one scene where I actually was like watching YouTube videos of cars running into buildings to see how buildings collapse. So, I mean, these poor kids go through everything. And, I mean, the whole premise is that, you know, Josh is 12. The oldest kid is 16. The youngest is three in the first book. And it's just how these kids are, you know. Josh is a huge zombie fan. He loves the lore. He loves everything about the, you know, the movies, the TV shows, the comics, the books. And he, you know, he applies that knowledge to survival, and not only his survival, but the survival like his little brother and the girl he has a crush on and that sort of thing.
So I planned to start the whole discussion with this three-level question, and you've already touched on parts of bits and pieces of them. So why zombies, why horror, and why YA?
Well, I've only written the two YA books, The Midnight Spell and then the zombie, the Living Dead Boys series. The Midnight Spell was because I love Buffy.
Who doesn't?
And Cody Boy, one of my dearest friends, and I were brainstorming one day when I think I was baking something, cookies or something.
Cookies.
And you should love that. And he was like talking to me about a YA idea, and we ended up spinning it off into a fresh idea. Then we decided to write it together, and that book is out by Permuta Press. It's called The Midnight Spell, and it's a lot of fun. We alternated writing. I wrote for Christy, and he wrote for Adam, so that was fun. And then let me think. And the thing with zombies, you see, I, you know, the way I came to publication is so weird. But I originally started writing As the World Dies for fun. It was when I was on the road a lot for my former day job. And I had a very vivid image in my head of the first scene in the book. And I had hung out on this forum, zombie forum. And it was after the first Dawn of the... Well, the Dawn of the Dead remake had come out. And that was the first big revival of zombies, and it kind of died out, and then it came back again. So I wrote up what I saw, and I posted it, and I had considered it a short story, but the response is really positive. And the difference was also that the two characters in it were women, and most of the time, at that time especially, it was always men that were the leads in these stories. So I had very positive feedback behind the scenes, though there were several male authors who tried to shut me down right away, which was very disappointing. But then there was an equal measure of women and men behind the scenes telling me to keep going with it. And what was interesting is years later, one of the authors who tried to shut me down told me he did it because he was jealous that in that one, that short story, he saw that I had a lot of talent, and he was intimidated, and he just wanted to shut me down. And he apologized, and I was grateful.
Well, they say, haters hate because they can't equate.
Yeah, or can't create.
There you go. That's even better.
He apologized, and that was grateful. I was grateful for that. But so I wrote it online originally, and it kept getting bigger and bigger as I went, and it was very popular, and I had a lot of people asking me to release it as a book. And by the time I pulled it down off the forum and looked at it, it was actually the size of 4 books. It was so big. So I split it into 3 and self-published them. And I wrote it because I love the characters, and it was fun. And I mean, I had always liked the zombie genre in film. And when I started writing it myself, there were certain themes that I was addressing that I wish that the movies had gone further on. And one of the big themes is pioneering. Of course, I'm from Texas, so you know, pioneer spirit is still huge in Texas. And so how do you build the whole premise of the book is basically, how do you survive? Not only do you survive, but build a community in the dead world. And so that's what the books are about. And people really love the books. They love the characters and everything else. So I self-published it. It got optioned. And because it got optioned, I ended up getting an agent, and the agent sold it to Tor. So it just kind of went on its own.
Cool. Keep going.
So that's how that came about. But I never really considered myself to be any kind of like a zombie author. I never really even considered myself. I didn't know I was going to be a horror author. I always thought I was going to be a mystery thriller writer. And my muse just does not give me those stories. My muse is all about the monsters.
What's wrong with monsters? Monsters are good.
No, it's fine. It's just, it was surprising because growing up, I really, really thought I was going to be a mystery writer, like Agatha Christie or Dick Francis. You know, I really thought I was going, or maybe science fiction, because I loved Star Trek and I loved Star Wars. But in that, no, though I have written some science fiction, but my brain just went, no, let's play with monsters. And I'm like, okay, let's go, let's do this. And so it's kind of weird because I grew up very sheltered, and I didn't watch horror movies as a kid. I mean, if I saw anything of horror movies, it's because I happened to be at a friend's house and they'd have something on. I was a scaredy cat. I was terrified. And posters at video stores would scare the crap out of me. I would see, you know, posters for, you know, I remember the original Alien
with the xenomorph
trailer.
No,
the original Alien was just an egg. The Alien trailer was just an egg with the crack, with the music.
Yep.
That came nightmares. And so the fact that I write in the genre is just, to me, hilarious. But I love it. It's fun. And I really like exploring the human condition, but set against the background of horrific things happening. Like, how do people react when horrific things happen to them? How do they overcome, or how do they succumb, you know? That's what makes it fun. I write much more than just zombies. I mean, I wrote Living Dead Boy because I have 3 groups of fans. I wish I could make them all one kind of fan, but I don't have that. I have the fans who will only read stuff if I have vampires in it. And they'll read The Tale of Vampire Bride. They'll read Pretty When She Dies. And they'll read In Darkness Must Abide. But they will not read anything to do with my zombie books, no matter how much they love me. Then I have my zombie fans. And they'll read As the World Dies. They'll read The Last Bastion of the Living series. They'll read the Living Dead Boy book. And they'll read my Zombie Tales from Dead Worlds collection. And that's all they'll read. They won't read anything else. And then I have the fans who are right in the middle, the ones I love, and I try to cultivate as much as humanly possible, because they'll read anything I write. And those are the ones I really, 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 really want to grow. I love the other 2 sides, but that one in the middle, I kind of want to grow that one. Because it would be nice that every time I put out a book, I don't get messages going, why are you putting out another vampire book? I really hate vampires. Why are you wasting your time? And then, or it's, why are you putting out another vampire book? Why are you always, you know, I want zombies. Why are you writing zombies? You know, it's either one or the other. And I mean, God bless them. I love them. And I'm appreciative that they love my stuff. But, you know, it kind of sucks when you have to sit there and defend your book. Well, you see, the thing is, I kind of have tried to write variety. And, you know, and I had somebody like contact me when The Mesmerized came out. That was my first hardback that came out from Permuted, and they're like, is this zombies? And I'm like, no, not really. It's a supernatural. Why aren't you writing zombies? I'm like, well, Permita Press has zombies. Why isn't it a zombie book? And then people tried to make it into zombies where they're like, oh, yeah, this is a really weird take on zombies, but you'll love it. And I'm like, okay, if you think it's zombies, that's fine. Like, whatever.
Zombies, vampires, monsters, scary things. It's all okay, seeing as how you're going that way, have you seen a movie called Afflicted?
No.
It's a vampire movie. But it doesn't come across as a vampire movie.
The thing is, I haven't really been watching a lot of horror movies of late because I've been kind of deep into writing my own stuff.
Right.
So I tend to, like, I don't watch stuff until, like, I'm in the, like, I'm between projects. So, like, Train to Busan, I finally saw that.
Awesome movie.
It's amazing. It's the best zombie movie probably ever made. Though I kind of...
Oh, I don't know about ever made.
I think it really is. I think it's brilliant.
I think it's an awesome movie, though.
And I try... it flips with Night of the Living Dead as my favorite zombie movie, back and forth. But I watched that after I wrote the Living Dead Boy books. Because I didn't want to watch it when I was... You know, writing about zombies. I didn't want to watch it when I was doing that. So
right, no, that makes sense. I would think the same way.
I don't watch as many horror movies as people think I do, and usually when I do watch horror movies, it's like I'll watch like a whole bunch of them in like one day, and then you know. But I don't read zombies books, so people always ask me for recommendations. But I've read. I don't really read that many, and if I do read any, it's going to be a friend's book, like. You know, Jessica Miggs or Timothy Long, you know, somebody I know. Usually that's when those are the books I'll end up reading. Because again, I try not to be in the genre that I write.
See, now these are some more of the questions that I will have in my list of things to chat about it too. Favorite movie, favorite book by somebody else, favorite other kind of writing.
My favorite book of all time is Jane Eyre. It's brilliant. I read it every few years. And every time I read it, I fall in love with Jane again. And I think it's for me as a female writer, the Bronte sisters, of course, are very influential on me. But I really felt Jane Eyre, she was such a revelation as a character. She was everything that, even today, I think women strive to be. You know, she's independent, she's forthright, she's, you know, intelligent. I mean, but at the same time, she's plain. She's not all that beautiful, but, you know, I think it's a great book. So that's
in
my
other
all-time.
Words, she's normal.
She's a normal, spunky girl, but she's more than that. I mean, there's a lot of complexity, like how difficult her life has been and how she's overcoming her past and just the resolve not to falter is really inspirational, especially because I'm a survivor of childhood abuse. So that character really spoke to me. So Jane Eyre is my favorite book of all freaking time. And then if I had to pick a more modern book, it probably would be Coraline by Neil Gaiman.
Okay, that's a good choice.
The reason why I'm going to pick that one is because when I started reading it, I thought it was very fanciful. In my head, I thought I was reading like a children's book. But the deeper you go in, the more it creeps into your bones. And it just, I like dread more than jump scares. And and the further you get into the book, the more the dread sets in. And it just feels like it's just starts kind of closing in on you until you reach the end of the book and you realize you didn't read a child's book at all. You know, it's just, it was very well done. And I actually reread it several times because I wanted to understand how he did it. Because it felt magical in a way, how the story transforms and how he used words to create this feeling of dread and how I actually had to turn the light on, which surprised me because I haven't done that since, you know, while reading, I had to sleep with the light on, you know, I hadn't done that since Salem's Lot. So, I mean,
which
was
a great
impressed.
Story.
Yeah, it's a really great book. So I was like, oh my God. But yeah, that's a book that I feel like that little tiny book is very intense. So I really liked it.
So you've mentioned, which is also, by the way, in the list of questions to be yapping about, strong female characters. Mm-hmm. Now, that I understand why, as a female writer, you'd want to, but in other means, where do you think, like, I find more strong female characters coming into the main front of various media things. And I like that because variety of characters, variety of stories means, look, you can have all kinds of things opening up for good stories. And why do you think we're not getting as many as we would from the past?
I think one of the main issues right now is we're addressing not only in mainstream media like television and film, but also in books, comics, all forms of media is diversity. And I think it's part of the growing pains of America. And for a long time, our spectrum has been the white male hero. And we all recognize him and we all forgive him. You know, he can be complex, he can have rage issues, he can be a real dick, and we still are like, oh yeah, we're right behind you. We forgive him all his foibles, all his, because we know that character. You know, tropes are an important part of storytelling, but at the same time, those tropes can trap you. So I think the trope of the white male hero, especially like in the zombie literature, like, was so enmeshed that when I wrote about Jenny and Katie and As the World Dies, people had this, oh my god, there's women? You know, it was like this really like knee-jerk reaction of I had broken some kind of sacred rule. And of course, now that rule is being broken over and over again in a wide spectrum of stories.
Resident Evil.
Yeah, well, not only that, it's like, you know, you can pick up a book now and you might be reading about, you know, a gay hero or a lesbian hero or a person of color, you know? So, as somebody who's some kind of brown, in my life, I've experienced my fair share of, you know, microaggressions and people's expectations of me. I mean, I told my husband, it's really sad, but every time we go to a convention or we go on vacation or anything, and I'm in, at some point in my stay in the hotel, I will be asked when I'm going to clean someone's room. So,
well, wait, you do that? Because I have a couple of rooms that need to be cleaned.
No, I do not do that. But I mean, it's just inevitable. People just don't even. And it was funny because one time I was literally standing there in with pink, purple, and blue hair, and I was wearing my Doctor Who T-shirt, and I was at a convention, and I had this person walk up to me and go, "Could you clean my room next? Because it hasn't been cleaned yet." And I'm like, "I don't work here." You know, and they're like, "What?" And I'm like, "I don't work here. I'm a guest at this convention." And they're like, "But you're," and their spouse pulled them away really fast. "But you're," and I'm like, "Go ahead, finish that sentence. Let's go there." So I think the thing is that we have these tropes and stereotypes in our head of what people are supposed to be like, what women are supposed to be like, what men are supposed to be like, what any, you know, all these, you know, variety of life people are supposed to be like. And, in my writing, I wrote about women because, one, I am a woman, but there's a lot of strong women in my life. I mean, from the time I've been growing up, and, you know, just women are fully fledged human beings. Who would have known it from watching Hollywood? I mean, they're not just there to prop up men. They're actually there to have their own agency, their own hopes and dreams and aspirations, and to fight their own battles. And, you know, I've known women who were in the military. I've known women who, you know, were teachers, ministers, you know, just a wide variety of life. But these are people that were, you know, had a very strong sense of self, but you don't see that necessarily in media. You don't usually see that in a story. So what I wanted to do, to me, a strong female character is not necessarily someone who can pick up a gun and kick someone's butt. It's somebody who can stand up for themselves, somebody who has, you know, is making decisions for themselves and the people that are around them. Maybe they're the leader, maybe they're supporting the leader, maybe they're the sniper, maybe they're the person who's, you know, making sure everybody's getting fed, whatever it is. I mean, they have a role. They're a fully formed person. They're a fully realized person. To me, that's a strong female, well-rounded character. And I think now that we're getting more female characters, and, you know, you look at the movies like Atomic Blonde?
Huh, yeah, that one looks good.
Right, or I think that's the name of the movie. I mean, we're seeing, you know, a Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, we've seen awesome movies more and more from a woman's perspective with these fully rounded, fully competent women that aren't just there to prop up the man or there to die so the man can get revenge. Oh, I hate that trope. And that's very much in the zombie genre. It's like, I had somebody one time say, "Hey, I'm going to name my character's wife after you." And I'm like, "Oh, that's really nice." He goes, "Yeah, she dies and he gets revenge." I'm like, "That's not so great. Don't do that. No." So, I mean, we have these certain tropes that we're so used to, you know, that we just kind of fall back on them constantly. So diversity is really important because it breaks those tropes. It breaks those stereotypes. And the reality is, a way a man I tried to explain this one time to somebody who was going to fight with me that everybody has the same story. And I'm like, no, that's not true, because, okay, let's take a scenario. Zombie apocalypse. Lone survivor in a house. They hear a noise. They look outside, and they see a band of people. Okay? So if it's a woman looking outside, and she sees a band of men only, it's only men in that group, is she going to call out to them?
Nope.
Okay, it's a black guy. He looks out and he sees it's only police officers. Probably, is he going to call out to them?
Probably not, because but maybe.
It depends on his history, because because in the United States, especially, the relationship between the black community and the policing community can be fraught with, and in the Hispanic community too, can be fraught with a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. So is he going to call out? Now, if it's a white guy looking out the window and he sees a bunch of white guys, is he going to call out to them? Yes,
most likely.
Probably. Most likely. So you have three different reactions based on people's past experience. And then you can change what those people are outside. If it's police officers, is the woman going to call out to them? Probably, if she's a white woman, because she's going to consider them to be safety. They're the authority. So, I mean, and you can switch those groups around a lot. And whoever's in the house and whoever's outside, you can switch them around, and the reaction is always going to be different because of those people's experiences. And then you can go further and go, okay, it's a woman and she's a Marine, you know, and she's got, you know, she's ready to go, looks out and sees other Marines. Is she going to go out there? Probably. Yeah, I definitely think so. So, I mean, you can switch those around. So you can't say everyone has the same default story, because it's not true. Everyone's going to react differently. People are going to respond in a different manner. Well, so
that's all about having an intelligent character and an intelligent story that says this character grew up in this environment, will react this way. This character has a different environment, he'll react or she'll react a different way. And that's about having intelligence behind the stories and behind the people.
Right. But a lot of times people all fall into this like default category. It's kind of like when you watch a movie and you see a Latino show up, he's a gangbanger. You know, or you see a black guy show up and he's a gangster.
Or somebody with a red shirt on Star Trek.
Well, red shirt on Star Trek, you know that person's boned.
He's going to be capped, man.
But we know the story tropes. It's like if a guy is married to a woman and he's madly in love with her at the beginning of the movie, and it's an action movie, we know chances are she's going to get kidnapped or killed. We just know these tropes.
I don't know what you're talking about. Really?
So when you can take them and shake them up. I mean, I had this gentleman reach out to me one time. He's in Africa. And he's like, I'd really like to write a zombie book, but I don't know anything about America. And I don't. So don't put it in America, right?
Put about it in Africa.
Because I would love to read that book. I would love to read about the zombie apocalypse in an African country from the viewpoint of a person living in that country. I think that would be awesome.
There is a movie out with that story.
Right. But I'm saying, but his story would probably be different from the movie.
Totally.
You know, so wherever you're at, you know, you have a story, no matter what color your skin is, no matter what your background is, everybody would have a different viewpoint, a different story to tell. And I think I try to shake it up. I try to make it not be the same thing over and over again, which is why I wrote Living Dead Boy, because writing something from the viewpoint of children is very different from writing from the viewpoint of adults.
Absolutely.
And children also have a tendency to believe that they're immune and immortal.
No.
So they do things that adults would never do. So.
Well, you mean like run up a tree and expect to be able to survive after it? No.
Oh, and then there's also like just 12-year-olds are the worst. That was the one fun thing is like Josh is 12. And he makes some decisions that I know as adults, people, you know, one of my beta readers, I was really pissed at him for making this decision. But then I realized he's 12. Well, yeah, that's the point. He's 12.
He's not yet learned stuff. It's like, yeah, no, that's about, okay.
Well, they did a study with 12-year-olds where they like put them in a simulator, a driving simulator. And when they were by themselves, they basically obeyed the law. You know, they braked at stoplights and stop signs and stuff. They put them with their peers and they're blowing through red lights. And, you know, and it wasn't that they necessarily even had peer pressure from the rest of the kids. It's just being in the presence of the other kids made them much more risk takers. So, like, especially in Journey Across Zombie Texas, Josh makes some decisions that as an adult, I was like, oh, baby, don't do this. Don't do this. And he's like, I'm going to go do this. I'm like, oh, shit. You know, this is not going to end well, you know. And so, yeah. And I mean, and I also like the trope of the military guys always being the bad guys. I really hate that one, too. So,
yeah. Know, no, I, Journey, it gets pretty tired.
And so Lost in Texas, you know, in the Living Dead Boy series, Josh's dad is a ex-Marine back from Afghanistan. And I really, like, in these books, you see the evacuation. You see men and women, police officers, you know, fire department people. You see the military all putting their lives on the line to try and get escort people out of the cities and get them to safety and stuff. So I studied up a lot about evacuation routes and how people would evacuate and stuff like that. So, I mean, that was kind of fun to write from that perspective too, because a lot of times in books, you know, FEMA's evil and, you know, don't go to the FEMA camp, don't go to the rescue center, you're gonna die, you know. And so I wanted to go, well, what if that's not the case? What if this is the way you live? So and also the sheltering in place thing that they do sometimes, and they tell you to shelter in place, you know. So I had a lot of fun with that.
Do you read a lot of news?
I didn't for a while. When I was sick, I didn't. I have since January.
Okay.
No. A certain event happened in January where I felt like I kind of need to know what's going on.
That was definitely a good point, yes. That's like, okay.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, I need to know bombs are coming my way.
Yeah, well, I've been a big fan of news reading and reading and watching for a long time because, like, part of my regular job requires knowing what's going on as far as financial activities. Like, why is the dollar going up? What's going on? So just reading news and saying, oh, crap, we're going to – okay, that's going to affect – okay, I got to think about that for long term, next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever.
As someone who suffers from PTSD, I limit myself, though, because there was a time period where I was a voracious news consumer, and it was affecting my mental health. So I had to kind of – step way back from that. And but since January, I have been paying more attention. Okay. And of course, if it has to do with research for books and stuff, I will definitely be paying attention.
Then here's a fun news bit that I saw yesterday. Happened in Saskatchewan. 150 head of cattle following a beaver.
I saw that. It was adorable.
The beaver is herding them, and it's just they're following him, and the beaver's like, why don't you guys leave me alone? I want to go find something.
Just, or the beaver is like, I am a god.
There you go. There you go. Maybe it's the beginning of the evil beaver people.
The beaver will lead the cows against, you know, the armada of humans.
Exactly. So that news bit was hilarious. And I can't even believe that it made it to Canada's national news service. It's like, yep, look right there. It's like, oh my god.
Everybody come on. That's why cats are popular on the internet. Everybody needs that moment, that break. We need to look at something that's cute and adorable and or goofy. I mean, because, you know, we get inundated with bad news. And I think that's also why the genre that I write in is very popular, because I think it's a safe outlet to kind of release that anxiety and those fears and those worries. I mean, I think that's a place to just let it go and just, you know, you can go and imagine yourself fighting against zombies, but then you can close the book and you're safe, you know, which is very different from other factors in this world. So,
and then I could also say that it's also very safe to, oh, it's okay to kill zombies, but killing people?
Yeah, not so good.
Not so much nice.
Yeah, and I stay away from books that are, I like keeping zombies the bad guys. I mean, I do have, you know, one of the villains I've hated most in my life is in the Living Dead Boy series. In book two, this character named Chad shows up, and oh my god.
Oh, of course, his name is Chad.
He's a horrible person. Oh my god. It's a 16-year-old boy who thinks he's really smart and knows it all, and he's actually incredibly dumb. So he puts them in all sorts of danger, so.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I knew that kid growing up. In fact, my husband was reading it and he goes, oh yeah, I knew a guy just like this.
I think we all know a kid like that. And at some point when we grew up, we know an adult like that. And I'm sure as we even go and start creeping back into the grave, we're still going to know somebody like that.
It's just like, he's that guy who just thinks he's so smart and he knows it all. He's going to lead you to victory and you're gonna, like, oh, you're going to get us all killed.
Well, let's update that statement. That guy or that girl?
That girl, too.
Yes. Because there's been those. both sides.
Well, but usually it's a guy who thinks he's in charge. It's not usually a girl who thinks she's in charge. It's usually the guy who thinks he's in charge. He thinks he has default rights on leadership, and he's actually an idiot. So,
I've been seeing some women like that too.
Not so much. Well, it's usually a dude.
Usually, but I've been seeing more women in that same. Okay, expand the foray, but it's an either neither. So it's not really that big. I don't really have to actually ask you a lot of questions because you seem to be going through most of my list without me having to actually prompt you on them. So I've probably got like three other ones that you haven't touched on yet. So we'll go with this one. Small press versus traditional press versus self-publishing.
I've done all three.
I know.
And they all three have their perks and they all three have their heartbreaks. So... small press is the thing. The risk with small press is they can close on you very easily because
as we've seen,
yes, we have multiple times. Small press can make you feel that you're a legitimate writer, that somebody else has approved of your writing, and therefore they want to publish you. But the reality is, there's a lot of those really small presses can close very easily if they take a hard hit financially, like if they get a book that actually doesn't end up. Bringing in revenue, and also a lot of times with the smaller presses, and this is not with all of them, but a majority of the smaller presses don't give you anything extra that you couldn't do yourself, like promotion and everything else. There are exceptions. There are some small presses that have been around for a while and are continuing to do very well for themselves, but I think it's probably most of the time it's because those people have branding. They know what they're doing. But a lot of presses, let's admit it, a lot of times people start presses just because they think it's a way to make money.
Mm-hmm. Or so, because they think it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've seen a lot of money machines lately. I've noticed that. When you go with the bigger houses, the weight is just... Okay, I pitched a book in 2012. I turned it in 2013. I didn't get my revision letter until 2014. And it didn't get published until 2015, and it got bumped twice in its publication date.
Nice.
Then the cover was – the first cover was just simply awful, and I hated it with all my heart and soul. It looked nothing – like it didn't do anything that – like
– It didn't sell the book.
It was just horrible, and my agent fought for about 6 months to try and get it changed. And when they changed it, it was better. But then they made instead of the character on the cover, which in all the they'd sent like 8 versions of the book, and I told them which one was my favorite and what they could do to change it. It was a red cover; it looked actually pretty nice. They all had a brunette. My character was a brunette, but when they sent the final cover, it was a blonde. My character is not blonde, and then the colors were so muted. The colors are super muted. I mean, to the point where I was at a convention and I was with the bookseller, and the bookseller had a stack of the book in front of her, and this guy walked over and goes, "Hey, do you have that book by Rhiannon Fraser?" And she goes, "It's right in front of you." And he looked down and goes, "It is." I mean, he's staring right at the book, but it's so like the colors were so muted and so bland, and he literally was not registering that was the book. So you don't have control over the cover, and I mean the waits are just ridiculously long. I mean, with traditional publishing, a lot of times, not ridiculously long. I guess I can't say that. They take as long as they need to take, because traditional publishing is a completely different thing.
They have a method.
They have a method. They have their process. They're doing a lot different. The thing that's really good about traditional publishing is you usually get your books on the bookshelf, and that's how you pick up a lot of new fans. That's what happened with me with As the World Dies. I've picked up fans because of Pretty When She Dies being on the bookshelves for a certain amount of time, and The Mesmerize of Dead Spots. So, and then, unfortunately, when Permuted switched distributors, my books are no longer on the bookshelves, which is... sucks, because when they were on the bookshelves, people were actually discovering me. So that's a really good thing about traditional publishing, is that if your book is on the bookshelf in a bookstore, people will discover you that way.
And if it's selling, they support you better.
Right. Self-publishing, I really love it because I'm in total control and I make the final decisions on everything, on like who's going to edit it, what the cover's going to look like, what the interior is going to look like, when it gets published, you know, if I update it, because, you know, like sometimes, you know, somebody will send me a message and go, hey, there's a typo in your book. And if it's self-published, I can just go fix it and re-upload the file. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that with traditional publishing. You know, nope. I had somebody come up to me and go, here's a typo in your book. And I'm like, I can't do anything about that. That's not self-published. That's a traditionally published book. And that, you know, went through, it escaped the eyes of the copy editor and the editor and me. So I can't do anything. Sorry.
Yeah, even with a traditionally published book has gone through 3 levels of editing, you still find mistakes in there no matter what. I mean, I've seen A-list, like top-notch, this guy sells millions of copies. And I read his book and it's like, I find 13 typos.
It's because no one's perfect. Exactly. I mean, it's not on the editor. It's not on the copy editor. It's because no one's perfect. And you know, in my case, I'm blind as a bat. I mean, I've been wearing glasses since I was 4 years old. So words tend to blur together in my eyes. So, I mean, and the thing is that's why I hire people to look at my books. That's why I have beta readers. If beta readers find something weird and wonky, I will fix it. You know, if the editor says, hey, you need to fix this, you know, I fix it. Traditional publishing is also where I get my monthly income because with traditional publishing and with small presses, a lot of times you get paid quarterly or biannually or sometimes yearly, and you have to pay back the advance. And if you don't pay back the advance, then you don't get a royalty check from them. So, and most writers don't pay back their advance. Usually the advance is the only money you're going to get for those books. So, you know, it's just, there's pros and there's cons. I mean, for each one. That's why I'm a hybrid writer. I do all of it. Well, not small press. I'm not doing small press anymore. But I do traditional publishing and self-publishing.
So when you were mentioning something called the radish earlier, I was just going to ask, do they also have a rutabaga?
Ha ha. Okay. Actually, radish was started it was originally in Asia, and it was very popular, so they brought it to the United States, and there's actually a lot of really big name authors that are behind it, and it's gotten some really nice financing. Basically, it's a way to write in a serialized manner, so mm-hmm. people get mini chapters every week, and this is how I originally wrote As the World Dies, and I really love doing that. So writing on Radish has been fun for me, and it's also a way to create a new income stream. Cool. So people can read it as it's coming out, and then when those people who want physical copies or are waiting for the entire story, they can pick it up 3 months after it finishes on Radish. Then I can go ahead and publish it elsewhere. So
that was a new one on me. I'd actually never heard of Radish before, so now I'm going to have to look it up and see what it's about.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of different stuff on there. I mean, it's like you can have like erotica, and then you can have post. They're trying to get more like dystopian and post-apocalyptic, and there's mysteries, and there's YA. There's like science fiction. There's all different kinds of stories. Right now, it's invite only. So, and you can inquiry, and then they'll let you know. Like, you can go, hey, you know, I've written all these books, and they'll decide if they want to invite you or not. I know some people who tried to get in, and they didn't, but I got lucky, and they invited me. So I was like, yes, awesome.
Nice.
And then I'm also writing a serialized story for Patreon. And
which was going to be my next topic.
Okay, what's the question?
That was just basically it. And what do you think about Patreon?
The reason why I'm using it is because, like I said, I got sick for 2 years and my writing output decreased significantly. And then there were some things that happened in the industry that adversely affected me, such as when Permuted switched distributors, all those books that were in the bookstores got returned. So where I went from getting royalty checks, I'm now in the hole with my advance because of all those returns. So certain avenue streams kind of went dry. Then I was ill.
Just to clarify for some people, those returns actually count against your sales.
Yes, they do.
And some people don't necessarily understand how that works as far as the distribution cycle is concerned. So I just wanted to highlight that. It's like, yeah, they get 100 books, they put them on the shelf, they sell 20, those 80 go back. That comes out of the overall totals.
Right, and then the author carries that. The author carries that. So where I'd been getting, royalty checks from that, it did stop. So there was my revenue streams kind of dried up, on some of them, not all of them. And so I was ill, so I asked for help on Patreon, and I did manage to get some writing out, but I'm really upping it now because I'm well, thank God, doing much better. So I'm writing a post-apocalyptic supernatural zombie story on Patreon just for my patrons. And it's a dollar a month gets you access to the weekly installments. And it's a fun world. It was actually, if you read Zombie Tales from Dead Worlds, it's my zombie collection. There's a story called The Necromancer, and it's based in the world of The Necromancer. So this is a world that was like ours and then completely collapsed under the weight of a supernatural zombie pandemic. And now the way the world has restructured itself in the aftermath is very different. I mean, there's the story is centered right now in a settlement that shuns technology because they believe technology created these supernatural zombies. And then they also don't trust the necromancers, which was a group of people who showed up that can control the dead, and they don't trust them at all.
Why would anybody trust the necromancers? I mean,
they think the necromancers, a lot of people regard them as, their safety because they can come in and, guide the zombies away, but this one settlement doesn't trust them at all. So it's kind of fun. It's like fantasy. It's post-apocalyptic. It's supernatural. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I'm having a great time with it. And so if that sounds like something you'd enjoy, I mean, definitely, Patreon, $1 a month, and it funds my writing endeavors. Basically, it helps pay for marketing, promotion, which is extremely expensive, and copy editing and all that kind of stuff.
So you're not a Kickstarter user or a that kind of thing. Kickstarter and the other ones, whatever. You don't use that.
No, I think having patrons, it was difficult for me to ask for help because it's kind of hard to go, oh, I was doing really, really well, and then I got sick, and now I'm not doing so hot. I mean, it's kind of a little hit on your pride.
Gotcha.
But then I looked at it this way, is that, back in the day, that's how artists were funded, mm-hmm. Composers, artists, even writers, had people that help fund their endeavors. And so what I'm trying to do is make it more enjoyable for my patrons beyond just getting like an ebook for me or a paperback or updates. I'm trying to do more videos talking about my experiences as, a writer, and then also writing this serial, just trying to create more for them so that they can enjoy it. So
cool.
But it's fun.
We've got 3 minutes left in the show, so I'm going to say, throw out your, how do people stalk you?
Just go to RhiannonFrater.com, and everything's there. All the links to my social media. You can see my full list of books that I've written, and you can always, there's even a contact, so if you want to ask me a question, you can do that.
I have a question.
Okay.
How do they get the caramel milk in the caramel milk bar?
Magic.
That's a better answer than the one I had, so that's good.
That's my answer to everything. I don't understand magic.
Magic's a good answer. I mean, you never know. It's always a possibility there. Are you coming up to any conventions in the near future?
No, I need to write. Now that I'm well, I need to buckle down, and I need to get books out. Maybe next year I will go back to the convention circuit. But right now I'm really trying to concentrate on getting more content out, getting more books into the hands of my readership. The zombies, the vampires, and the everybody loves everything ones. Trying to get everything to everybody, all my groups.
Everything to everybody?
Yeah. Oof.
Good luck with that.
I know. The zombie fans, man, they're fervid.
They are very fervid.
Oh, and Lord Jesus, yes.
Quick thing. How is it that the zombie phase, and this is, it's a thing that's been killing me for the last 20 years. How is it that it can still be a popular thing? What? In 1 minute, go.
Because we're very unhappy with the state of the world right now, so the idea of it being destroyed and resetting it, and us being the heroes when it's reset, is very appealing.
Okay, that works. That works well. Well, I'm going to say, Rhiannon, thanks for coming on the show and sharing your wealth of information and stuff.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. I mean, it's been 6 years since we last chatted.
It's been a long time.
Indeed. So this is the live version of the show, and this by tomorrow night the archived version will be up, and you can share that, and all of your other fans can listen to you talk about this stuff as well.
Awesome.
And everybody else in After Rot Land, come back again every Wednesday. Join us, chat with us, talk to us, Twitter us, Facebook us, all those other fun social media, whatever the heck things they are out there. And coming up in a few seconds right after this show will be The Spoon. Y'all have fun. Enjoy. Rhiannon, again, always a pleasure to chat.
Thank you.
Everybody else there in After Rot Land, have fun.
Have a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day that teddy bears have their pee.